and welcome everybody here today, especially Representative Morgan, who's here to present to us on our first bill this morning, House Bill 2283. If anybody is here to comment generally on the issue of revenue options to balance the 2001-03 budget, I'm sure we'll have time when we finish our public hearings on these two bills that are before us this morning. Also, committee, there will be a meeting at 3 o'clock today. There will not be an evening meeting today. So, with that, let me open a public hearing on House Bill 2283. Mazin, do you want to tell us what this is before we go to Representative Morgan?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the House Bill 2283 extends the exemption offered for non-profit corporations which lease from municipalities, golf courses, which are also used for discharge of wastewater or sewage effluent, both of these being worked together and owned by a municipality if it's leased by a non-profit entity, and this non-profit entity uses the buildings for the management of that work, will also, by this bill, be exempt. Last session, there was House Bill 2670, which gave the exemption for the land of the golf course and the discharge wastewater that is owned in the same way and leased by also the nonprofit. This one would extend this exemption to structures. I've talked to Douglas County assessors. There's been about 3 years worth of property taxes on the structures and the improvements for the Myrtle Creek Golf Course that is going to be immediately impacted by this legislation. Others I've talked to in the counties, very few examples of who could use that. The only place would be in Prineville, but they don't anticipate a lease at this point.
Okay. Representative Morgan, welcome to Revenue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Susan Morgan. I'm state rep in House District 2, which is part of Douglas County and part of Josephine and Jackson counties. And I'm here today to testify in favor of House Bill 2283. For those of you that sat on this committee in the last regular session, you saw the first incarnation of this bill. And what it does is it very narrowly defines a golf course in my district called the Myrtle Creek Golf Course that ran into some economic problems. And just a little bit of brief background, the Myrtle Creek Golf Course was designed as a way to get rid of the effluent that we generate in our sewage treatment plant rather than putting it in the river. And the golf course is kind of a neat little economic development piece in the local community. We have a lot of tournaments there all the time. People go golfing there. It's a good little golf course. And if you golf, let me give you a little advertisement here to come down and try it out. The school uses it for PE classes, and everyone that goes golfing has to drive down the main street of Myrtle Creek, so it actually has a lot of side benefits. But it has a lot of financial problems. In the design and build phase of it, they got extended out past their budget and didn't have the reserves to do what they needed to do to keep themselves solvent during the startup phase of the business, and got into real financial difficulties. One of the ways that we were trying to get them into a situation that they were more stable was to have them relieved of their property tax burden. And so we went through a process in the last session where the basic outline of this bill was defined. It went to a root group, and there were a number of issues that were raised, and finally managed to get the bill through with no opposition to it at all. Took it home and got ready to apply it, and found out that we had neglected to put the buildings in the bill. We had only put the land in the bill. And so I'm back here now to ask you to allow the buildings to be added to the tax exempt status. I call this the sequel sequel to the first bill.
Exactly.
And hopefully we've got it right this time, and you won't see me in the next session trying to do something else with it. So with that, I will just open it to any questions that people have.
All right. Questions for Representative Morgan. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, are you aware of any other golf courses that might be making use of this new law?
We purposefully defined this very, very narrowly, and as far as I know, there is no one else that fits in the window that this creates.
I see. Thank you.
Well, I think it's understood. Mazin said potentially Prineville, but not. I mean, whatever the case may be. So
that's correct.
Anybody else? I have a question for you. Do you want to carry it?
I would be glad
okay.
to.
Good. Well, when we get to work session. Okay. All right. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Roger Martin is here. Is he on your team? Susan? Is he on your team?
Yeah. Okay.
You've never met this guy. I wouldn't admit it either.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin, and I represent the Oregon Golf Association, who are here to solidly support this bill. It is narrowly defined. I would just add a word that in the future I hope we don't always worry about how narrowly defined it is, because this is an avenue that I think all of us, if you examine the subject, would say is a good idea. The city of Prineville has been mentioned. The city of Prineville, about 5 or 6 years ago, built a class golf course with a major contribution from EPA as an in lieu of a sewage treatment plant. And almost all of the effluent, the second and third stage effluent from their sewage treatment plant, is used to water the golf course in Prineville. It's a great idea. It is used elsewhere in the nation. When the word golf course comes up, there's often a reaction from some people about one of these, first exclusive, and then secondly, some kind of an environmental hazard. I want to point out to you that in the last 20 years, the greenskeepers for golf courses have become extremely professional, and these are usually ecological, beautiful examples of how you can keep open space. They have become wildlife preserves all over the state. All of you, each one of you, has a golf course in your district. If you examine it, even if you don't play golf, you'll find that the wildlife is a lot greater than it is off the golf course. And the environmental protection, the use of fertilizers and pesticides, has been limited to the point where they're better maintained than most of our collective yards. There are other places in the state that may in the future only use this. Representative Hobson and I have worked on a project in Warrenton, typical small town where the sewage treatment plant is too small for the population they have, and they are too small to have enough money to build a bigger one, and they're struggling with it. One of the options is to work with the Port of Astoria, who are in the process of developing another piece of property within the city of Warrenton as a golf course. And there's a possibility, we don't know that yet, there's a possibility that some of the effluent that now goes into their holding ponds in Warrenton could be used there. I don't know that the bill will ever have an application, but I just wanted to point out this is a good idea that should be encouraged, and in the future we may be back to you with other ideas to encourage the use of it. But please pass this.
All right. Thank you very much. Question for Mr. Martin. Thank you, Roger. Does anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 2283? I don't see anyone signed up in opposition. Okay. All right. Well, let me close the public hearing on House Bill 2283, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2283. What's your pleasure, Representative Berger?
Mr. Speaker, thank you. I just want to comment. I've not been to Myrtle Creek. I am a golfer. I have been to Prineville, and it's a wonderful golf course and wonderful habitat, but I will say it's prominently displayed throughout that you're not to lick your golf ball in Prineville.
I don't golf. Is it common practice?
Unfortunately, it struck me as much. Just a comment.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Verger.
House Bill 2283.
Representative Verger moves House Bill 2283 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, I'm intrigued by the comments made by our last testifier, and I'm aware of the fact that I have a number of small towns in my district, many of whom have difficulties dealing with effluent. Yeah. The Kalapuya River specifically comes to mind, and maybe we can make use of this bill in some way.
Sure. Myrtle Creek is kind of a pilot project. I know what, elsewhere they're growing poplar tree plantations with effluent. I think there are other kind of applications that are being used to dispose of it otherwise than just in streams. Representative Verger has moved House Bill 2283 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, please call the roll.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Barr.
Aye.
Hoffman.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Aye.
Four. I mean, aye.
Very good.
Aye. House Bill 2283 goes to the floor of the due pass, and Representative Morgan, be pleased to have you carry it. All right. Thank you. Concludes our work on House Bill 2283.
If I didn't do it, the chair would have.
You know, it hadn't occurred to me. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2043. And, Lizbeth, that's you. Okay.
That's her small contribution.
Lizbeth, tell us what it's about.
Chair Shetterly and committee members, I'm Lizbeth Martin-Mahar with the Legislative Revenue Office. So with House Bill 2043, this is going to allow a corporate excise tax credit for corporations that provide motor vehicle insurance based on the number of miles traveled or time-based rating insurance plans. It specifies that an eligible corporation must provide motor vehicle insurance policies that are at least 70% based on a mileage-based or time-based rating plan. It limits the corporate tax credit to $100 per vehicle, $300 per policy, and the credit can only be claimed once per policy. It restricts the excise tax credit total to $1 million for all tax years beginning January 1st, 2004, and before January 1st, 2009. Now, there was a bill similar to this last session, House Bill 3871, and that passed the House, but was referred to Ways and Means and did not go any further. Now, the real revenue impact question with this bill is, you know, when would we get to the $1 million credit limit? This, basically, with the revenue impact, I assume that under current law, there are not any plans in place that would actually meet the 70% based on a mile-based rating plan. And I know that's what the proponents have said, but there is also some who have questioned whether or not current law, when we have certain plans where over a certain threshold you'd have one tax rate versus below a certain threshold of miles, it would be another tax rate, if that was something that would be considered to be already a mileage-based plan, or whether or not it would qualify under this bill. So it's just a question of how many plans currently qualify, and if there is none, then it's how quickly would we have 10,000 vehicles basically with this type of mileage based plan that's 70% or more based. So I assume that in 2003-05 biennium we'd have a loss of 360,000, and in 2005-07 640,000 for a total of 1 million.
Okay.
And there is a draft, I guess, being worked on for you at LC, but it wasn't completed yet.
That's
for this
fine.
Committee.
We'll still entertain testimony about it. Senator Ringo, good morning. Welcome to House Revenue.
Pleasure to be here. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Charlie Ringo, State Senator from District 17, and I'm here in favor of House Bill 2043. You know, I live about a mile from the Sunset Highway up in Beaverton, and I know what traffic is on a nice Saturday afternoon when you don't think you'd have to worry too much about a traffic jam out on the highway. It's amazing. The ramp lights just to get on, even in the middle of a weekend, are tremendously backed up. And, you know, there's lots of reasons why we want to cut down traffic congestion. A huge one is the cost it imposes on our society, and another one is the human health impact of air pollution, and it's very real. A lot of people don't consider that, but the studies will show that a tremendous amount of asthmas and cancers are related to airborne particulates, and everything that we can do to reduce the amount of congestion on the road is a good thing for us. This bill recognizes that there are variable costs in operating a motor vehicle, and one of those variable costs ought to be car insurance, because people really do shape their behavior based on what they have to pay. People consider, gee, if I can carpool and don't have to pay for gas, gee, that's an extra incentive, and therefore I will carpool, or maybe I can save a trip. And these kinds of considerations ought to come into play when people are paying for their insurance. And this bill is intended to create a program where that would occur, and therefore reduce the amount of congestion on the roads with all the attendant benefits that would have. So thank you very much, and available for questions.
Thank you. Senator Ringo, any questions? Representative Verger.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Did you consider this bill, which is an excellent one for congested areas, being somewhat limited in the state of Oregon to certain areas, to the congested areas?
Well, I don't think so, because I think in all areas of the state it makes sense to try to give incentives to reduce driving. I know there has been some concern in the past expressed that maybe this doesn't make sense in rural areas, except even within the class, insurance is priced based on class of drivers, including class of drivers in rural Oregon. And, excuse me, so even, I'm sorry, but so even there it makes sense that there ought to be a consideration when you pay for insurance as to how much time you spend on the road.
What about the areas that don't have an option of transit or of any other types
I don't think this bill is really intended to push people out of their cars by any means. It's just intended to price insurance in a way that really it ought to be priced, because the more time you spend on the road, the greater chance there's going to be an accident. I mean, that just makes sense. And in the case of rural Oregon, there still would be opportunities for people to say, you know what, there is a variable cost for me to get in the car, and maybe I can save a trip, maybe I can carpool, maybe I don't really have to run to the store tonight to get that thing because I don't need it till tomorrow anyway. And it's just people can make those decisions. And like we all do when we pay for things, we make subtle decisions as to how we can save money.
Okay. Other questions?
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Thanks. Let's bring up then our next witness, Chris. Chris? It starts with an H.
Everybody knows my name is difficult. Hager Baumer.
Okay, I just. Can you make that out?
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Your handwriting is problematic.
Actually, it's fairly phonetic. Good morning.
Okay.
Good morning, Chair Shetterly, members of the committee. My name is Chris Hagerbaumer. I'm a program director at the Oregon Environmental Council, and I'm here today strongly in support of House Bill 2043. So I wanted to describe first what pay-as-you-drive insurance is. It's basically an insurance pricing concept that directly links vehicle insurance premiums to a critical risk factor, which is the amount of vehicles driven. So under traditional auto insurance pricing, drivers pay a fixed rate each year, and this rate might include a small discount for, you know, not driving to work or putting fewer than 8,000 miles on the car. But once you pay that premium, you have no opportunity to save money by incrementally reducing your mileage, and therefore no incentive to drive less. So this is a large fixed cost, and once you pay that cost, again, there's no incentive to drive less. This is unfortunate because low-mileage drivers are at less risk of being in an accident than high-mileage drivers and ought to be rewarded accordingly. So any actuarial textbook will tell you that increased annual vehicle mileage tends to increase crash risk, all else being equal. Even a perfect driver faces risks from causes beyond their control, an animal in the roadway or what have you. And although a higher risk driver may crash every 50,000 miles, while a lower risk driver may crash every 500,000 miles, in either case, reduction in mileage reduces collisions. If you leave your car at home, you can't be in an accident. So that's why consumer advocates, actuaries, and others have recommended that insurance underwriters offer use-based insurance premiums. So under this concept, drivers would be offered a per-mile or per-minute rate. These rates would incorporate all the traditional rating factors. Basically, you just convert that fixed premium into a per-mile or per-minute premium. You would have to determine how many miles a person was driving, either through audited odometer readings or through the use of advanced technology. And drivers could be either charged monthly or provided a rebate on their annual or six-month premium for the miles they don't drive. Now, paid insurance can be a consumer option. An analogy is the long-distance telephone service, where people can pick from a variety of payment options, from unlimited calling plans to per-minute calling plans. Customers choose what fits their lifestyle. And in an answer, actually, Representative Verger, to your question, no matter where you live, you could take advantage of a paid premium. Again, rural drivers pay lower fixed rates than urban drivers because they live in less congested, less crash-prone conditions. So in that pool of drivers, if that person in a rural community drives less than someone else in that rural community, that person could save money. And in fact, we've been hearing from drivers all around the state, including communities like Bonanza, Cave Junction, Oak Ridge, and Redmond, who have told us they would like this option. So quickly, what are the benefits of offering pay-as-you-drive insurance? First, for the consumer, individual drivers have more control over their insurance costs. Rates are easier to understand. It's kind of like electricity service, where you know that if you caulk your windows and you turn the thermostat down, you can save money. And pricing is more equitable and accurate with regard to crash risk. And also, coverage becomes more affordable for low-mileage drivers. And we have research from ODOT that shows that many low-mileage drivers are low-income Oregonians and senior Oregonians. Society also benefits, and this is why we're interested in this bill. Based on how drivers have historically responded to increases in transportation costs, the price incentive inherent in paid insurance would result in a 5 to 15% reduction in annual mileage. And the beauty of this concept is that it doesn't raise the cost of driving. It simply converts what's now a fixed cost into a variable cost. And with reduced car travel, we get reduced traffic congestion, fewer crashes, and reduced air pollution and global warming pollution. So by giving drivers a positive incentive to reduce driving, state and local governments can manage demand for road space and forestall some of the huge costs associated with new roads and parking facilities. Basically, if you look at out and you look at the demand for more highways, it's as effective to try to reduce that demand and much more cost effective than to try to continually build new roads to meet that demand. Also, insurance companies could benefit. I mean, if you have more actuarially accurate car insurance, you reduce accidents. And the first insurance companies to offer something like this could attract a number of low-mileage drivers. Also, as you get better mileage data, you correlate with that with claims, you can improve the actuarial accuracy of your rates. And also, companies who offer paid would be viewed as consumer-oriented, proactive, and environmentally responsible. So now, there are some administrative costs associated with pay-as-you-drive insurance, and this is one of the reasons why it slowed the adoption of this concept. So an insurance company has to file with the insurance division, develop an appropriate rate structure, and track mileage. This is why we want to offer a tax credit to insurance companies. Sorry, I just came from another hearing, and I was so thirsty over there that I wish I'd gotten some water, but...
You can do that.
Can you?
Yeah.
So, Progressive Insurance piloted the paid concept in Texas using GPS technology to base the cost not only on miles driven, but when and where the auto was driven. Participants in this pilot gave it rave reviews. Thank you. And they saved about an average of 25% on their premiums. But the tracking system that Progressive used was patented as Autograph, and it didn't bother to note what road the car was on or what neighborhood it traveled in, but only whether it was urban, suburban, or rural, and the time of day. We understand that Progressive is still offering this pilot to participants, but has decided not to broaden it for use nationwide, primarily because of the cost of the technology. But this technology has been adopted by a major insurer in the UK, which is piloting this type of insurance in London. Plymouth Rock is an insurer on the East Coast that's seeking federal funding for a pilot, and other insurance companies are showing interest. The state could fuel that interest by providing a tax incentive. If the tax credits utilized, the benefits could be extraordinary, well worth the modest investment of $1 million over a period of 5 years. If it proves to be too small of an enticement for insurance companies, the state has lost nothing. We do have a couple of amendments, but since they aren't available to you today, we could postpone those.
Well, if you could just, so that we know what we're looking
sure.
at down the road in this, if you could just take a minute to tell us what the amendments would look like.
Sure.
I'm happy to hear that.
We have a business advisory committee that recommended these amendments that would allow a tax would allow a company that has no tax liability in the year that they sell these premiums to either roll the tax credit forward to a year where they do have tax liability or to sell the credits to a company that does have tax liability. And these are meant to address the fact that the industry has seen a downturn in profitability in recent years, particularly post 9/11. So, in conclusion, we believe that paid insurance is a real effective and fair way to reward drivers for reduced mileage, could be a consumer option, and it could really help reduce accidents, congestion, and the impact of the automobile on the environment. We strongly encourage your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Hagenbaumer? Hagerbaumer. Even when it's typed in front of me. Representative Berger.
Yes, I'd like to have you respond to the question that I asked before, and that is, did you consider using this in congested areas?
Chair Shetterly, Representative Verger, members of the committee, I think the idea is that an insurance company would pilot this in Oregon or perhaps the Northwest, and that it would be offered really to anybody who wanted it. So I imagine that people who would use this would be ones who do have quick opportunity to use the bus and so on. That's more likely to be in the congested areas of Oregon. The trips that are easiest to forego tend to be the commuting trips because there are alternatives. So I don't think you'd want to limit it only to those areas, however, because there are people in other areas of Oregon that have expressed interest in purchasing this.
You say that people with low incomes drive the most. I'd just like to explain a little bit to you about my district, and that is that we have many displaced workers and unemployed people who now have to commute in order to get a job. So if you live in Reedsport, the chances are, if you're head of household, that you are now commuting to Eugene or Springfield because that's where the job is. And that is, of course, the hour and a half drive. If you live in Reedsport and you can't afford to drive there, you will try to get a service job located in Coos Bay. So you're driving much further than many people in an urban area that might be commuting to work. You would not have an option of transit. Would you like to comment on that as far as the benefit is concerned?
Representative Shetterly, members of the committee, Representative Verger. Again, we're looking for an insurance company to offer pay-as-you-drive as an option. Obviously, people who are going to have to drive more than average wouldn't want to purchase insurance this way. They would want to stick with the fixed rate per year. So I agree that there are definitely some low-income people who do drive more than average. The vast majority actually drive less than average, so would be able, especially in this economic time where you're looking for ways to save money, this could be a real opportunity for those folks.
Yes, sure.
As a member of the Road User Fee Task Force, we're looking at lots and lots of things over the next 5 to 8 years. For those who might want to volunteer but have a privacy issue with the technology, what would be your response to that?
Representative Shetterly, members of the committee, we really think that probably the best way to do this for an insurance company, the cheapest way would be simply an annual audited odometer reading. I can't imagine anyone being too upset about anybody finding out how much they drive each year, and if they did, they wouldn't participate in this program. If the company, I think maybe companies really are very interested in using the advanced technology because you can look at other risk factors besides mileage. And if that was offered, well, then people who didn't like that technology wouldn't want to use that kind of premium. They wouldn't opt into that program. I would personally prefer the just mileage-based.
Representative Scott.
What's the concept on the audited process? How do you conceive that that's going to be performed, and how will it be paid for?
Representative Shetterly, Representative Scott, members of the committee, what an insurance company would probably do, it would be their cost to cover, not the state's cost to cover, although, just going back to the Road User Fee Task Force, eventually the state will need to track mileage, and figuring out how to do that and maybe talking with insurance companies about how to do that might be a good thing. But in any event, I expect that what they will do is set up a situation with mechanics or Jiffy Lube, those types of providers, certify those providers to do the odometer readings, and then those would be sent back. You know, you'd go in order to renew your policy, you'd have to have an odometer auto reading, mileage reading, sent into your insurance company. It's relatively simple to set up a system like that, but it does cost some money, which is part of the reason why we want to provide this incentive that we sunset in a few years.
Other questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It may be that I simply missed it, but do you have an idea of how many miles would be the break-even point at which a car owner might decide to go with the pay-as-you-go, on the other hand, a flat rate?
Representative Barnhart,
do you have a sense as to how much that might be?
Chair Shetterly. Yes, the ODOT estimates that the average driver in Oregon drives about 12,000 miles a year. So anybody driving less than that might want to take advantage of this, especially if even if you were at 12,000 miles and you wanted an incentive to drive less, you might take advantage. The people out there, other advocates of pay-as-you-drive insurance and people who've studied the issue, say that about a third of drivers out there might be interested and be early adopters of this concept.
Thank you. So this would most likely appeal, at least first, to people who already drive less than the average.
Representative Barnhart, Chair Shetterly, that's true. Your early adopters would be people who already drive less.
And I assume that under this kind of a plan, someone who made the mistake of buying it and then drove more would pay more than they might on a fixed rate plan.
Chair Shetterly, Representative Barnhart, we aren't telling the insurance company how they should do this. They might want to say, you pay us up front your fixed rate that you've always paid, and then we will reward you on the back end for those miles that you reduce. That's the most likely way that they would do that, and then they wouldn't be no one would be penalized. You wouldn't be paying more than you ever did before for your insurance premium.
Okay.
So this bill doesn't dictate how insurance companies would set it.
No.
Yeah. All right. Questions any further for Ms. Hagerbauer? All right. Thank you very much. Representative Dingfelder. I've seen half the chamber in this committee this morning. See you.
They let me out of water committee to sneak over here. So. Thank you, Chair Shetterly and members of the Revenue Committee. For the record, I am State Representative Jackie Dingfelder from House District 45, Northeast Portland. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2043, This bill would create a provision for pay-as-you-drive auto insurance on a voluntary basis, as you've already heard from Ms. Higginbarmer. I'd like to talk a little bit about traffic congestion, which is something, unfortunately, I'm way too familiar with, representing Northeast Portland. And as you're well aware, it's an increasing problem throughout the state, especially so in the Portland metropolitan area. Between 1990 and 2000, travel time and congestion on Portland area highways increased significantly. In fact, a recent transportation study of 75 major U.S. metropolitan areas shows that travel time ranking went from 23rd worst, and this is for Portland, to 11th worst out of those 75 that were surveyed. The region's congested lane miles ranking went from 35th worst to 15th worst. And I've included in your packets on the second page a copy of some basic figures from the study that I just cited. If you'll notice, the region has recognized a decline in every roadway system performance measure in the study. I am well aware of this problem firsthand. Two highways that run through my district, Interstates 84 and 205, are parking lots for a good portion of the day. Congestion isn't just a problem for peak commute times anymore. It not only affects urban residents, but the suburban and rural residents who commute to and from urban centers for work. Mileage-based auto insurance, such as the kind that would be made available with the passage of House Bill 2043, is expected to reduce the vehicle's mile traveled by participating vehicles by 5 to 15%. With the reduction in miles traveled, House Bill 2043 would result in savings to taxpayers by reducing traffic congestion and thereby reducing the need to build expensive new highway systems or expanding highway systems. And the way I look at it is every little bit helps. House Bill 2043 would result in savings to taxpayers by also reducing the amount of wear and tear on existing transportation infrastructure. And serving on the Transportation Committee, we're all well aware of the problems facing the state as we're trying to come up with funding for needed maintenance and repairs of our highways and bridges. House Bill 2043 is an innovative approach. It continues Oregon's proud tradition of a willingness to experiment with new ideas and creative ways to address problems. To quote last Friday's Oregonian editorial, pay-as-you-drive insurance is an experiment that the legislature should encourage. I want to thank you for your attention today, and I'll be happy to turn it back over to the experts who can probably answer some of your tough questions.
But first, are there any questions for Representative Dingfelder?
I have.
Ah, Representative Virgin.
I'm asking all the questions today. How do you think we can justify giving tax credits on something that the insurance companies actually could do without offering them any carrot at all, especially at a time when insurance rates are climbing drastically? One company in my hometown has gone from $68,000 last year to $113,000 because of 9/11. So I wonder if you'd like to comment on that.
Well, that's an excellent question, Chair Shetterly and Representative Berger. I think there's a number of components, as the witness before me mentioned, that this is a voluntary program, number one. So this is not, we're not telling insurance companies they have to do it, but this is one of the tools available to them to help us deal with some of the congestion problems. That's the way I see it, especially in my district. Number two, I think as far as the justification, part of it is because we are reducing traffic congestion, wear and tear on the roads, it will help offset our costs, the state's cost of maintaining, repairing, and upgrading those systems. And number three, I think the sunset will address that because, in a way, this is a pilot project, and we're going to try it out and see what kind of results we get. And I think that's one of the reasons that you do have a sunset and you see how the program's working. And I actually think we should have that for all of our tax expenditures, and we need to revisit those on a regular basis to see if the policies are actually working.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Scott Bricker. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the Revenue Committee. My name is Scott Bricker. I am the Education Director at the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. I'm also having the fortunate time to spend some time in Salem this year representing bicyclists and numerous issues. I'd like to testify in support of House Bill 2043. And I'd like to start with the story of how this really works, how this might work for me. When I moved to Oregon in the early 90s to go to grad school at PSU in urban planning, and I started primarily as an automobile user, I started driving to PSU each day and getting hit with a $7 parking fee, and I realized, this isn't really working for my graduate school budget. And so I got on my bike, which had been kind of rusty in the garage for a while, and started biking downtown. And that was really my first lesson in transportation economics. I got a couple more through graduate school. But one other thing that I learned in graduate school, and I continue to realize as a bicycle rider, and one of the reasons I really support this bill, is that at least for automobile use, and actually consumption of many items, you could look at an item such as driving as using it as a per-mile cost versus a fixed cost. Automobile use, as has been mentioned previously, has a high level of fixed cost. In fact, ownership and insurance are really two of the greatest costs of automobile use. The AAA estimates that per mile cost of driving is about 46 cents a mile. So on my drive to Salem today and back, if I had to pay per mile, I'd have to slap down a $50 bill. And I would probably think about driving alone twice, which I did today, maybe try and carpool or maybe not even come, except this is an important bill, so I probably would. But I think that most transportation users don't have to pay that per mile cost. In fact, if you buy your car and you're paying your monthly insurance, your car, if it sits idle, is actually... You're squandering your investment. You're not using what you're paying for each month, and it just sits there and goes bad, and you don't use your car. The bicyclists and the folks that I represent, the bicycle industry, bicyclists around Oregon, walkers, in fact, and we do a lot of work with children, biking and walking to school, all these folks would really benefit from a pay per mile for insurance. It would not only give people who currently bike and walk the incentive, the financial incentive to bike and walk more often, but it would also give other folks who are on the margin the opportunity, the financial incentive to try something new. And there has been shown and proven, such as my graduate school experience, that programs that provide incentives or give you options, transportation alternatives, actually work. For example, in the Lloyd District in Northeast Portland, 6,000 employees there have annual bus passes. And I have a stat here that show that transit use increased from 21% to 43% of employees each day going into the Lloyd District. Another reason of that is because parking meters were put on the street, so parking was also an additional cost. In a tight time of tight budgets, people looking to save money, I think that this would be an opportunity where people could really assess their transportation use and could actually decide whether or not they were going to take that extra trip, and maybe they could start biking and walking or using other modes. I also want to mention something that hasn't been brought up, which is another importance of bicycling and walking, which is the health aspects. The number one health cost in our society today is from chronic diseases, many of those coming from inactivity and the sedentary lifestyle. Oregon is seeing those problems in our health care, and it's over 60% of adults are obese or inactive and overweight. Centers for Disease Control and other national health organizations are really looking to bicycling and walking, active and healthy communities, and people getting away from their cars as a way to not only increase their health, but also lower health care costs for employers, for state agencies, which would also have a revenue benefit. I think this bill could get people there and would really help move that agenda along. So with that, I'd like to thank you and again state that we support the pay-as-you-drive option and take any questions.
All right. Thank you. Representative Berger. Any questions?
Do you come on the weekends and bicycle up and down our coast?
Well, I have, Chair Shetterly, Representative Verder, and the committee. I've biked up and down the coast once or twice. I drive up and down the coast more frequently, although I do have friends in your district, in fact, Qualman family, David Qualman of the Oyster, I think, farm family, who's a BTA member, an avid cyclist. I know he would support this, and I've ridden with him a bunch. Actually, bicycle tourism is a big deal in Oregon. A lot of people come from all over the world to bicycle up and down the coast through your community and through other parts. Cycle Oregon is a huge bicycling event that brings in over $1.5 million. So there's a lot of financial incentive as well for the bicycle industry.
We see many bicycle groups that enjoy the coast. I haven't seen anybody wanting to ride their bike from Reedsport to Eugene or Springfield, however, to work every day.
Sure. And I understand. That makes sense.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's bring up three, maybe this time. Just we'll go in volume. Lynn Lundquist, Roger Martin, and Rivka, is it, Gewurz? I understand you're not all here together, so I'm not trying to team you up, but we'll get you at the table just to kind of save a little time in transition. Let's start with Lynn Lundquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Lynn Lundquist, President of the Oregon Business Association. I think the first thing I'll do is simply maybe answer a question that you might have, and that is why the Oregon Business Association, which represents very large as well as small business around the state, is concerned about this particularly. We do have insurance companies as members. We have two committees that look at this very significantly in a significant way, and that is the Environment Committee, which is one of our major planks, as well as the Transportation Committee. And it was interesting, at first blush, they came with opposing views. The Transportation Committee did not support it because the first information we had, it was going to cost $1 million to thin this body anyway. And that by itself, obviously the Business Committee recognizing the difficulties that you face. But when we got the right information, both committees did endorse this concept. I think I'll just try to maybe answer a few questions that I've heard a little bit. One of them is in regard to the fact of, you know, what's the privacy issue? We believe that when you actually put this into practice, that the companies themselves are going to design however it is it's going to work with their customers. And I believe that the logical way for them to, for example, to get the odometer reading will probably be just go to your insurance agent once a year or twice a year, whatever it is. We all live close to those. So I think the opportunity to not get involved in a privacy issue is not a big is not certainly a detriment to this program. We also believe, coming from a business background, that people make decisions based on business principles. And the business principle is simply, if you want to spend money, we should have a utility associated with that. And in reverse, if we cannot lower our utilities significantly and save money in the process, we'll do that. That's the principle of this bill. It's just simply, if you see an opportunity to drive less then, and take advantage of that, then you should pay less. And the third thing I want to mention is, just remember, it's a pilot project. That's really what it is. And that's something we would sign on to, it is because I don't think we should get in the business, as Representative Berger is talking here in tough times, of subsidizing the sense of the insurance industry. But the insurance industry will need some subsidy to start this program. And it's really no different than a lot of the other things we do. the pollution control tax credit, I think, is a, you know, sort of that kind of a thing, where there's some subsidy at one point to help make changes within our policy. With that, I would just open to any questions.
Question? I guess you answered them all.
Thank you.
In anticipation. Roger, Ms. Gewurz, let's go to you then.
Okay. Chairman Shatterley and members of the committee, my name is Rivka Gewurz, and I'm the executive director of Northwest Jewish Environmental Project, and which is located in Portland, Oregon. And I'm coming today in support of this measure. Northwest Jewish Environmental Project is a sponsoring member of the Oregon Interfaith Global Warming Campaign. And we, along with faith partners throughout the state and throughout the nation, are developing a much stronger commitment to the realization that the faith community, as well as the community at large, has a moral obligation to be ethical consumers and faithful stewards of the planet we've been given. Last year, the interfaith community launched an interfaith call for energy conservation and climate justice, in which leading clergy, rabbis, and faith leaders throughout Oregon and throughout the nation specifically challenged consumers to find alternative ways of transportation and to be mindful of the fact that every mile we drive has a direct implication on the air we breathe. Here in the U.S., we produce 25% of global warming emissions, with only 4% of the world's population. Here in Oregon, a third of our CO2 emissions come directly from our transportation choices. The faith community strongly believes that we as a community have a responsibility to step up to the plate, to make conscious choices that will allow us to encourage people to drive less, to use transit more, and to reduce the trends that we are facing. Here in Oregon alone, some of the implications that are facing us because of global warming are displacement of our coastal communities because of rising sea levels. We're seeing reduced snowpack and greater smog because of hotter summers and wetter winters. And our farmers, our forestry, and our fishery systems will all be significantly impacted by climate change. Because of these critical, larger issues, we in the faith community strongly support this creative solution. As Oregonians, we have a responsibility to reverse the dangerous trends before us, and the way that we can most effectively do that as citizens is to reduce our consumption at the pump and our time spent behind the wheel. Congregants throughout the state have this fall and this winter begun accepting that challenge to bike more, drive less, use carpool. And while their cars are sitting in their garages or in their driveways, they are still being asked to pay the same level of insurance as they would if they were driving as much as they had been. So in essence, they are already paying more per mile for the privilege of having their vehicle by also stepping up to the plate as ethical consumers and driving less. This bill gives folks like that a choice. It doesn't remove choice from folks who, for various reasons, decide they need to stay with the existing system. But it does honor and encourage the citizens in this state who are accepting the challenge to steward the creation that we have and to help reduce whatever implications we can as a community the effects of global warming. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Gifford's question, Representative Verger.
Do you believe, as I do, that this bill is an excellent bill for areas where there is congestion and where there is a great deal of pollution, and that it might, and my question to you is, do you think it would have been more economical and less expense to have done a pilot program before even the entire Mid-Valley of Oregon as opposed to all the states?
Well, certainly, those of us who live in the urban areas do have greater opportunity to use transit and to carpool. But I can also speak to you as somebody who grew up in the rural community. And our dollars are tight. And from what I'm hearing from folks, you know, that's true even more so today. So people do have to make choices and do make choices about how frequently they can afford to fill up at the gas pump. The problem is that we are in a very tight timeline in terms of our world's health and well-being. We in Oregon produce more carbon dioxide than Ireland does, than whole countries do. And it's a challenge that other countries are trying to face and that our state is grappling with, just like everybody else. I think what this opportunity does is it doesn't make anyone do anything, but it gives both industry and individuals the opportunity to be part of the solution.
All right. Thank you. All right, Ms. Bovers, thank you very much. Roger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin, and among other things, I'm the executive director of the Oregon Transit Association. And on behalf of the Oregon Transit Association and two of its Lane County members, and I address to the Lane County delegation here, Lane Transit District and TAGO, the Transportation Alternatives Group of Oregon, and I've left letters, I won't quote from the letters, we all support this concept and urge you to adopt the bill. I met earlier this year with Chris and the Oregon Environmental Council and talked about this. We had a lengthy discussion in our board of directors at the Transit Association, and all of us agree that this is one of those good ideas that Oregon ought to try. I've been around these halls long enough to tell you that we are a state that leads the way, the bottle bill being a great example, and there have been other examples. We don't know that this is going to work or not, but it's worthwhile trying it. Anything that we can do to discourage the increased traffic on our highways would be a good idea. It won't help me because I've averaged for 40-some years about 25,000 miles a year. I happen to drive a lot. The gentleman to my right told me he averages 50,000 miles a year. That's because he lives, or did for a long time, live further out than I do. And we have to get someplace. I appreciate what the representative from Coos Bay has said, but I doubt very much the insurance companies are going to penalize anybody. If they do, there's two of us here. I also represent that 60% of Oregonians that I don't know if I qualify as obese, but I have a severe case of Dunlap. So anything that could be done to get me out of my car would be helpful. I would suggest to you that when you hear the problems the insurance industry may bring to you about this is a bad time and rates have gone up, I have lived through three of these cycles in the insurance industry, and usually what you find out is during good times when the stock market is healthy, the masters in business administration take over as the CEOs of insurance companies, and their attitude is bring the money in, we don't care how you compete, get us the money and we will invest it and make a fortune. Then the market turns down, the MBAs go out, the insurance analysts come in, the guys that are really good at this, and they force the companies back to making their insurance rates match exactly what the risks are. This market is, and passage of this bill may not have an immediate effect, but when times get good again, those MBAs are going to be back saying, find some reason to go out and be competitive, and maybe it will encourage people to drive less. So it's a tool that might be very helpful. Please pass it.
All right. Questions for Roger? Thank you very much. We have a couple other late arriving witnesses who will Mitch Rofsky and Jenny Holmes. Jenny Holmes.
She's here. She just stepped out.
Okay.
A second. I saw her.
Good morning.
How are you? Should I go ahead as we...
Oh, yeah, go ahead. We'll bring her up when she comes in.
I very much appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. My name is Mitch Rofsky. I want to thank you for inviting me here to testify once again in support of pay-as-you-drive auto insurance. I hope this doesn't become a regular feature of each legislative session. I'm the president of Better World Club, which was formed to help disseminate 21st century approaches to travel and transportation. We offer roadside assistance, travel, and insurance. Prior to becoming president of Better World, I was president of the Working Assets Mutual Funds, one of the first socially responsible mutual funds in the country, and the chair of Business for Social Responsibility. At Better World, we strive to provide our customers with options, such as eco-travel, which enable them to be sensitive to the environment. Better World is the first travel company, in fact, the first consumer retail company, to have its consumer services certified by the Climate Neutral Network, which is a coalition of environmental groups, such as Natural Resources Defense Council and World Resources Institute. When desired by our customers, Better World, through our Travel Cool program, has begun offsetting the carbon dioxide released in the atmosphere, which when each of us flies. We believe that consumers knew how much carbon dioxide they were releasing into the atmosphere and had an easy way to remediate it. Carbon offsets would become the recycling of the 21st century. And much like carbon offsets, pay-as-you-drive auto insurance is a step enabling drivers to recognize the real cost of driving, including the environmental cost. We've been selling auto insurance in Massachusetts for over 5 years, and now we offer auto insurance in 18 states, increasing to 42 states before the end of March. As a result, we're interested in this legislation because we would be very pleased to add mileage-based services to mileage-based auto insurance to our menu of environmentally sensitive services. 2 years ago, I thought it important to emphasize what we aren't, which is an organization of actuaries. Well, nothing has changed since then. We still haven't gone to actuary school. I'm not here to tell you that I have studied the issue and that the marginal cost of each driver mile is stable, nor have I calculated the administrative costs that also impede going to a pure pro-rata mileage system. But just as 2 years ago, I believe that these issues are surmountable. Insurance is like most other goods and services. There is a form of volume discount built into the product. The more you buy, the cheaper it is. For many products, this is fine, no big deal, good for both producer and consumer. But for certain services, those that involve what economists call externalities, costs that producers don't have to take into account and thus do not pass on to consumers, pollution being a clear example of an externality, volume discounts are not as benign. The expense of the pollution in this case is not being built into the consumer's cost. People are incentivized to drive more and make more poor substitution choices regarding transportation alternatives because they don't have accurate information on the real cost of their driving. Mileage-based insurance would give drivers much better information as to the total cost of driving, and thus it is worth encouraging. Mileage is strongly correlated with risk. I'm sure you've already heard this today. I don't want to go into too much detail. It's only one factor. Whether you're driving interstates or neighborhood highways is another factor. But nonetheless, it's a decent proxy for what your accident risk is. Some insurance companies offer discounts already, as I'm sure you know, but these discounts aren't specific enough to really do the job that and give the consumers the kind of information about what the real cost of their driving is. You've probably heard that Progressive Insurance has done a test on this. To me, one of the key issues here is tracking. It's how are we going to track this? Progressive went all the way towards actually having a global positioning system in everyone's car. I think that's proven to be too expensive a way to go, but I think if we let the marketplace develop alternatives, we will find cheaper tracking methods that will enable this kind of insurance to spread. And finally, there are some privacy rights that people are concerned about. If we really are only track through global positioning systems, even though Progressive has said that their positioning system couldn't tell when you ran a stop sign, for example, which is one of the concerns I've heard, that nonetheless there are probably more benign systems that will be developed if we let the marketplace work and if we give the proper incentives to pay-as-you-drive insurance. One of our insurance underwriters, Plymouth Rock of Massachusetts, which serves three East Coast states, has told me that they're already interested in cooperating in a pilot around mileage-based insurance. As I've already noted, Better World hopes to market auto insurance to its Oregon customers in the not-too-distant future, and we'd be very interested in partnering with an underwriting company that offers this usage-based insurance option. HB 2043 is an appropriate incentive for insurance companies to help them cover the transition costs associated with providing a socially beneficial new rating policy. If anything, it's important to hear from the insurance underwriters to know whether the proposed tax credit is sufficient. The potential benefits, as I said, are great. If the legislation is adopted, it'll be fascinating to see whether this type of policy can break through to become a standard part of the menu of policies offered by a typical property and casualty underwriter. If we can identify a willing underwriter, Better World will promote the program as aggressively as my business partner drives. All right, as I say here, all right, Budweiser doesn't even promote that aggressively, but we'll promote it as aggressively as we can. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Rowski, thank you very much. Questions? The committee, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How do you, if you intend to underwrite this proposal, how do you intend to monitor mileage?
Well, first of all, we're an agency. As I said, we're in 18 states now, expanding to 42 states, but not as an underwriter, as an agency. We need underwriters to cooperate with us to sell this. Each underwriter, I hope, is going to track this. I do believe tracking is a serious issue. I hope we don't have to go all the way, although one day there will be global positioning systems probably in everybody's car, and that will take, you know, make this a much easier issue, but we're probably, what, 10 years away from that right now. In the meantime, I hope that we can do experiments, for example, with states as people have pollution, their pollution checks and things like that, in order to get a firm mileage from people. Our experience in the insurance business is people are reasonably honest as long as they know that they're going to get checked. Okay? If I say to you, as you're driving, we give a discount of 5,000 miles, and if I say to you, okay, do you drive that 5,000 miles, and you say back to me, is there any way for you to know? And I say no, people all say, yes, I only drive 5,000 miles. But if we say to them, we need your odometer reading right now, and we're going to ask you for your odometer reading again in a year, our experience is people are pretty honest, and that's a pretty benign level of tracking. Now, what I've heard from insurance underwriters is that that's not good, that they're not willing to go that route, that they want something more solid than that. Fine. I think that there are other ways besides global positioning systems, an expensive global positioning system, to do that. But I think we're going to have to get creative, and we're going to have to let the marketplace sort that out.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Ms. Holmes.
My name is Jenny Holmes, and I'm here on behalf of the Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon's Environmental Ministries Committee and Public Policy Committee, and also the Oregon Interfaith Global Warming Campaign. We support House Bill 2043, and we favor this bill because it will reduce global warming gases while providing an incentive for consumers to drive less. Reducing vehicle miles traveled has many other proven benefits, including fewer accidents, and you've heard much about these other benefits from the earlier testimony. Human-induced global warming is one of the overarching moral issues of our time and must be addressed at all levels of government. We need leadership at the national, state, and local level to tackle this problem for the well-being of our future generation and our generation. In our state, more than one-third of Oregon's carbon dioxide emissions come from vehicles. To be leaders in addressing climate change, our state must develop sound policies that will reduce our carbon emissions from the vehicle sector. Just to have a mileage-based insurance system available to consumers sends an important message. For the past 3 years, the Oregon Interfaith Global Warming Campaign has urged thousands of people of faith to make a commitment to reduce their driving, to use alternative transportation, and purchase more fuel efficient vehicles as part of their commitment to environmental stewardship. Many of these people would be very interested in participating in a pay-as-you-drive insurance program. We are pleased that this legislation, as it's configured, would not put low-income people at a disadvantage. In fact, it will help them to insure their car if they are in such a tight budget they may have not insured in the past, and will free up more resources for other important needs in their lives. Again, we are urging your leadership on this bill, which will reduce global warming gases and also save consumers money and reduce accidents and many other costs associated with use of vehicles. Thank you for this opportunity to share our perspectives.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Berger.
Would you like to comment on trucks? No one has mentioned trucks. I-5 is a good truck corridor. Do you have any data supporting what that's doing with global warming?
I don't have any specific data, but I know that it is a significant contributor to global climate change. And we see this bill as one small step forward. There are many other transportation areas that we need to be working on, but this is a good step, first step.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much, both of you. Does anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 2043? If not, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2043. And let me briefly return, with the committee's consent, to temporarily to work session on House Bill 2283 to allow Representative Haas to cast a vote. Is there any objection to returning temporarily to a work session on House Bill 2283? Hearing none. We're in work session on House Bill 2283. Representative Haas, how do you vote?
Yes.
Votes yes. We close that work session now. Is there anyone here in the room who is here to testify in general to the committee on revenue options to balance the 2001-2003 budget? Seeing no one moving forward. That will conclude the business of the committee this morning. We will reconvene in joint session at 3 o'clock today to hear public testimony on revenue options to balance the 2001-03 budget. Committee, there will not be an evening meeting tonight. That's correct. There will not be an evening meeting tonight. So we will convene in joint session at 3 o'clock, and that will be it for our special meetings this week. Of course, every meeting is special. But otherwise, then, we'll be reconvening at 3 o'clock and then again tomorrow morning. Thank you very much.
That's amazing.